Founded in 1991 by patients, the FSHD Society is the largest grassroots network of FSHD patients, their families, and research activists. The FSHD Society offers a community of support, news, and information for the millions of people affected by FSHD worldwide. This is FSHD Society Radio. Hey, welcome, podcast listeners. This is Tim Hollenbach, host of the FSHD Society Radio Show. And I'm happy to bring you some special podcast episodes. This one in particular is from our Giving Tuesday telethon event that I had so much fun putting on. We had 31 guests, and we broadcasted through Facebook Live 12 hours we broadcasted. And we had phenomenal guests on, from people from the FSHD Society, FSHD patients, advocates, scientists, and it was a great event that raised a lot of money for the FSHD Society and hopefully a cure for this disease by 2025. In this episode, we're going to highlight three of the interviews that happened in the first session. The first is going to be with Mark Stone, the president and CEO of the FSHD Society. The second interview is with June Kinoshita, who is the FSHD Society's Chief Strategic Program Officer. And then this episode will finish up with Dr. Lou Kunkel, who is a renowned Harvard scientist who actually discovered the Duchenne's muscular dystrophy gene. So we talk with him to finish up this episode. So sit back, relax, enjoy, and don't forget to share this episode with your friends as we highlight three great interviews in the first session from our Giving Tuesday event. Introduce the perfect guest to start this off, if you ask me, the FSHD Society President and CEO, Mark Stone. Hello, Mark, are you there?
Yes, I am. Thank you, Tim. And thank you for doing this for us.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah, it was kind of my crazy brainchild, quick idea that you guys ran with. And here we are. Here we are on a Giving Tuesday, going all out all day. Yeah, I got my water ready. I got my coffee over to the side. I'm all set, Mark.
Well, it's kind of like, be careful what you wish for.
Oh, Tim. Man, a little bit. Yeah, that's all right. That's all right. That's all right.
No, you're kind of our, in the best sense of the word, our Jerry Lewis here, reviving our telethon. And so you're going to sing at the end of the night, right?
Oh, no.
Never Walk Alone or something like that?
No, maybe I can pull that on YouTube, though. I can have Jerry Lewis sing for us.
All right. Anyway, enough fun and frivolity. I appreciate it. And it's we're excited. We're excited about this. As we look down through the roster of all the folks that you're going to have on and the individual, you know, they're our folks. They're our people, be them researchers or staff or families with FSHD. It's an exciting lineup. And so I just right now want to encourage everybody to stay tuned as much as possible. As a matter of fact, we've even moved our staff meeting till tomorrow because I didn't want anything interrupted from this day and from us being able to watch and participate.
That's awesome. I totally appreciate that. So FSHD Society is somewhat shut down, but I know you told me before pre-show here, when we had a quick conversation, you said, no, this is the work. This is the work that FSHD
That's
Society
right.
is doing. Absolutely. And even though I get to sit in front of this camera all day, okay, there is a huge amount of people in support that you don't see. You know, June Kinoshita, Cindy Lowry, Beth Johnston, yourself. So many people have helped get this all together, marketing, the phone list, and all the guests, et cetera, and try to line this up. It took a lot, and honestly, we did it in short order. I think we really kind of, I had the idea maybe a little late, and then we kind of ran with it from there. Yeah, so tell us, what is in store for FSHD Society 2020? If you're looking in the future, Mark, where do you see us going?
Well, I'll answer that, but I want to juxtapose off of what you just said.
Sure.
What has been so amazing over this past year is the response of the community. We are, Tim, literally raising up an army of activists, and that's one of two things that has always made the difference in expediting therapeutic discovery and delivery to families, is an army of activists. And the response has been incredible. People are sacrificially participating. That's both by signing up for clinical trials or studies. That's giving beyond themselves from a financial standpoint, mm-hmm. and from a time standpoint, managing, running chapters and things. And so, you know, the response of our community has been amazing. Now let me shift to to your question and really the focus of the society. Research focused patient advocacy groups can play an oversized role globally in speeding up deliveries of therapies to families. And that's because there's a built-in gap that requires a research-focused patient community to fill. And when those communities step up and fill that gap, sometimes, many times, you can reduce the therapeutic development timeline from 15 to 20 years down to 5 or less. And it's pretty incredible, but it is also a well-worn path. And that's the path we're following. So we didn't invent it. We didn't create it. We didn't even discover it. We're just following a well-worn path in the what might be called the ecosystem of drug discovery and development and research in general. So with that foundation, allow me to say that we are working to this coming year to bridge the gap. Over the last year and a half, we've invested more than $500,000 more in research. We have engaged a global community. We have studied and refined our focus. And so we're very focused on four key elements that will bridge the gap and expedite therapies. Natural history studies are a must. And I'm not going to go into depth about any of these. I think you're going to have our chief science officer, Jamshid Arjaman, on later, and he can no doubt go way deeper and way more knowledgeable than I can. But that natural history study component, the biomarker component, and that's molecular or circulating biomarkers in the blood so that we don't have to take muscles out of people to determine whether you have DUX4 or not. Those discoveries need to happen. We're focused on those. Imaging biomarkers, these can be turned into clinical endpoints that perhaps the FDA can embrace and accept in this disease. And then, of course, all of the clinical trial readiness that our clinical trial research network, that when we launched it, we had 7 sites. Now we're putting some more research resources behind it, and we're going to have 12 sites in the U.S. and 7 sites in Europe. So we've now expanded it to 19, perhaps 20 sites. And it is one of the main reasons why we've gotten another 8 or 9 pharmaceutical biotechs in our space, and now we're working with between 15 and 20 biotechs and pharmaceuticals because of our investments in the past. So it's those 4 key areas that we're focused with laser-like precision on bringing all of the stakeholders together around the table, meaning the FDA and regulatory compliance, researchers, key opinion leaders that are expert in those 4 areas, all of the biotechs that have a DUX4 solution or are working in our space, we want to bring around the table, And we're bringing other like-minded FSHD fundraising organizations like Friends of FSHD, FSH Research, Carino Foundation, which we're going to have Chris mm-hmm. Carino on a little later, which we're excited about, global organizations from overseas, and those kinds of things. So we're bringing all the stakeholders together at the table to accomplish the goal, and that will be accomplished. I'll take a breath now.
We're talking to Mark Stone, the FSHD Society President and CEO, as we embark on our telethon here for Giving Tuesday. Don't forget to give. That's a link there on Facebook for you since you found us on Facebook. There's also one at fshdsociety.org. Before we let you go, Mark, tell us a little bit about the clock that you carry around, the countdown.
Yes, I have on my phone, and I look at it every day. We stated that by 2025, we're going to be our families, all of them, will have access to disease-modifying therapies that will stop or halt or slow the progression of the disease by 2025. When we first went out with that date about a year and a half ago, I received some criticism from, some people, and I received some cautionary notes saying, maybe hedge a bit, maybe back up a bit. But I said, we can't. Our families require this. We need this. And I believe that while we have the will to do it, now we have to match that will with action. Mm. And that's part of this $100,000 today, this $100,000 challenge. I believe we not only have the will to do it, but we also will put that will into action today and every day. And I've seen it this past year. So, yes, I carry a countdown clock with me. It reminds me every so often. I have the ability to send a moment in time email to the staff, and I do, saying, hey, here's the time that we have left. Here's the time that we have left. And so every day we work with an incredible focus on, a laser-like focus on our purpose. And our purpose is to invest in research that's going to bring disease-modifying therapies to our families by 2025. And we can only do this with the support of the global community as we are receiving. And so I can't be more delighted.
Awesome. Thanks, Mark, for joining us this morning. We're going to see you later this evening, I believe, right? In that last session, you're going to come in about 10 p.m., I believe, Central Time. So looking forward to having you help us close up shop here. I think you're the second to last guest before our big headliner, Max Adler, shows up on that last segment.
Sounds good.
All right, Mark. Thanks a lot.
All right. Thanks, Tim. Bye-bye.
So that is Mark Stone, CEO, right, of the FSHD Society President. He is doing exactly what we're all saying. We need to step up, call to action. Words are great. I mean, I can sit here and talk about what we can do and talk about where your funds are going to help. It helps in support, helps in bio side of it, right? That we can try to find a cure, a treatment, all these things. The money is being dispersed properly. It's being used the right way to help us, and not just us, the generation we're in now, but my boys, someone's kids. That's what we have to think of. Forward thinking. The action we do today can affect those down the line. We're talking to June Kinoshita. She is the FSHD Society Chief Strategic Programs Officer. Hello, June, and good morning.
Hey, good morning, Tim. Good morning, everybody out in Facebook land.
Absolutely. Thanks for waking up with us. And I know you already, at least I think that's you, that's been helping out on already on the Facebook Society comments there. I know you've been...
Yeah, that's me.
So you're in the trenches with me. I know everyone's like, oh, wow, look at Tim. He's sitting there doing all this stuff, hopping around. But there is a ton of team effort here, folks. And June is one of the people that is part of this team, helping get this whole event put together. For me to you, June, thank you very much for making this happen. Without you, it wouldn't have. So just so everybody knows that. along with a host of other people that have helped, but you've been instrumental in the process of booking guests, getting things lined up, organized. Even this morning, we had a little change, right? Someone had a little different phone number to use. Okay, no problem. I mean, you were on it, and I appreciate it.
Well, you're very welcome, and I do want to thank all of the people who are going to be on the show today, because that when we put out a call that this is happening, will you be part of it? The response was overwhelming, and it made the whole thing easy. I didn't have to, you know, twist any arms or send, you know, they were just people are right on it, signing up to be part of it. So thank you all out there.
I'm glad you're on too, because, you know, FSHD Society has like changed their website a little bit. We've changed, looks like, a little bit even of the name, right? It was FSH Society, and then mm-hmm. FSHD Society has been changed. Those kind of things as we move forward with our group. Can you talk a little bit about that, like the change, the new stuff maybe people might see on the web page if they have not been there yet?
Absolutely. So one of our big goals, our strategic aims for the coming year to get to this 2025, you know, treatments or cure by 2025, one of the really important aspects of this is to engage and activate all of the FSHD families, individuals, you know, their loved ones who are out there. And we know that there are tens and hundreds of thousands and nearly a million worldwide, but just in the U.S. alone, we estimate somewhere between, you know, 40,000 to 50,000 individuals who have FSHD. And then each of them probably has 3, 4, 5 people who really care about them. So that's, you know, 200,000, 250,000 people out there who really care about FSHD. And yet we have only a tiny fraction of the number in our patient database. And we know that there are lots of people out there who have not been diagnosed. Some people are in families that they know they have FSHD, but they've never gone to the doctor to get a formal diagnosis. Mm. So they're not counted. They're not, you know, visible to the medical system. And of course, we know many of you have been on a diagnostic journey before you got your diagnosis, where it was, you know, thought to be something else, you know. And so we know that there are a lot of people still out there struggling with symptoms that they have no explanation for. And then we have people who have a diagnosis and they're, you know, early stage, they're doing okay. And their doctors never told them there's a community, or they may feel like they don't need one. They're doing fine. And we need to reach those individuals, especially because they already have a diagnosis. We have a path for them to make their lives better, but we need their involvement, you know, because the research that's going on now, the big natural history study called RESOLVE, or the clinical trials that are going to be coming, those cannot happen and those cannot succeed unless a lot of patients get directly involved. And so one of our big pushes as a society is to cast that big net and kind of, you know, educate and convince people to get off the fence, or come out of the closet, or whatever, you know, architectural metaphor you want to use. They're out there, they're not engaged. How do we impress upon them the importance and the urgency of their becoming involved? So to do that, number one, we needed to be much more findable and higher ranked in search engines. And for historic reasons, you know, maybe because facioscapular humeral muscular dystrophy is such a mouthful, people wanted to shorten it. And then FSHD, whatever it is, still seemed long, and FSH seemed manageable. So I think people, you know, back in 1990 said, let's use FSH, make sure everybody calls it FSH. And then as the internet era arrived and search engines arrived, mm-hmm. it turns out FSH stands for something completely else. There's a whole nother, you know, follicle stimulating hormone. Mm. And so then, you know, there's confusion. So then we said, well, we really need to always call it FSHD. And so every other organization that's been founded, a lot of them with advice from us. This has been called FFHD, you know, Global, FFHD Foundation, et cetera. But we were stuck with our historical name because it is a pain to change your name legally. And people knew us as that. So we kind of kept along with that. And then finally we said, you know, if we're going to reach all those people, we can't have a name that doesn't come to the top of your search results, you know,
right,
in the internet era. So we took the plunge this year. And so that was behind the name change, logo change. We wanted to make sure, you know, it's looked close enough to the old one that people won't say, are you the same or different? We're still the same organization, but we have grown. So we wanted to indicate that. And it also, you know, the name change embodies a really important part of our mission. And going along with that, we also changed over the website to make it much more, as our Lee Reynolds, who worked very closely with us on the redevelopment of the website, said, you know, we've got this huge house with many rooms on our website. If you've been on there, if you've poked around, you know, there is a ton of really excellent content in there. But if you're a newcomer, just been diagnosed, you know, it's like, imagine you're going to go visit somebody you've never met before and they have this huge mansion and they're like, I don't know if I want to ring the doorbell, you know. So she said, we've got to build a porch that looks really inviting and not intimidating and just bit by bit, you know, invites you inside one step at a time. The other analogy she uses, if you meet somebody, you know, set up for a blind date, like, and go out for dinner, you don't ask them to marry you right then.
Right. That'd be awkward.
So we needed to... So we need a website that was like, it's just saying, come take a look, you know, and we can help you, and just to bring people in more gradually. And then there's a huge amount of technology behind that to individually, you know, send out emails. You know, the first time someone joins, you follow up with an email that thanks them and then says, here's a really easy next step you can take, and then a next step. And maybe that one's not for you. Well, then maybe this one feels more comfortable for you. So so we have many, many ways for people to get involved. The most important is just give us your email so we can stay in touch, so we can tell you what's happening. You don't have to read them all the time. You don't have to respond to them, but at least we're communicating. Mm-hmm. And if something really big happens, we want you to know, you know.
Right.
So that is step number one. You know, please just give us your email address, and you can even opt out of getting emails. You can, you know, whatever, but just so we know who's out there and that we have a way to communicate. And then if you've been reading your emails, we've had a series of very important educational blog posts and emails that have been going out around why this is happening now. So we do have clinical trials going on. We've had two this year, the Acceleron trial, which was halted, but and I can talk about that in a minute, but and then the Fulcrum trial, which just launched.
Mm-hmm.
And just our experience, we work very closely with the companies. You know, we don't have any financial interest. You know, I just want to put that out there clear.
Sure.
We're very, you know, not having any conflict of interest is super important to us. But we partner with them because they need to be able to communicate with patients and recruit them for trials. So we partner with them on how to do that in the most efficient, effective way. And our own experience with that showed that it takes, you know, hundreds of patients that we reach by email. Maybe one in five will say, hey, I'm interested, which is really a pretty good number, actually. But then out of those, the number who finally make it is like one in 10 of the people who say they're interested can actually jump through all the hoops required to be in that study. So that means, you know, if we look down the road and say, okay, there's going to be more clinical trials, we're going to be this study and that study, we don't have enough people in our database, you know, to fill all those studies that are coming down the road. So we need more people right now who've maybe just come to us when they search on the website, but they haven't given us their email, or maybe they rely on their mom to send the email to their to them and their sibling who are both affected. You know, so they're invisible to us, and mom may not always send the email to them, or they may not live near a trial, so their mom will never. Maybe they live near a trial, but mom doesn't. So mom will not get that email, and so then kids who maybe the trial is down the road, but they'll never hear about it.
Right.
You know, so. So we have to really educate people about that and change that. And so we've put up a post on why it's important, why it's happening now, why we need more people to engage. Here's a really important thing too we've realized, and the companies have told us too, is we need a lot more people who are who've just been diagnosed, so and they tend to be younger and they tend to be more mildly affected. That's why they haven't been diagnosed until now, because just now their symptoms are starting to bother, bother them. And these are the people that, if you think about it, if you developed a treatment that could stop the SSHD process and the disease from progressing, when is the best time to treat? Obviously, when they early, right?
Right.
You want to stop anything from getting worse. But these are exactly the people who are thinking, I'm doing okay. And we totally understand also, they might not want to think about how much worse it could get, right? That's really a human feeling, you know, and we totally understand that. So they don't want to think about 20 years from now, maybe I'll be in a wheelchair, but because they're just focused on, I'm doing okay, I'm going to exercise, I'm working, I'm doing everything I want to do, I'm fine. But if they do not, then, you know, so they're fine and they decide they're not going to volunteer for study.
Right.
Then we will not know about how the symptoms change over time in that early, you know, mildly diagnosed population. And so we will not, if we don't understand that natural history of that early stage and the mild stage of the disease, we may not be able to develop a treatment that actually addresses that stage of the disease, if that makes sense.
It does.
Right. So that's why right now we have a big push to raise awareness. And everybody out there who's listening, we want you to take that message to heart. You may be one of those people who are thinking, you know, I don't yet need to get involved. Or you may be, you know, you may have family members who are, you know, taking that kind of view, and you can do so much to help educate them that now is the time for everybody to be involved, no matter how mildly, you know, wherever you are on the spectrum of FSHD, it's really urgent because, you know, companies have time to, you know, clock ticking. It's not just Mark and this FSHD society that has a clock going.
Right.
You know, the companies that invest in this, they have an even shorter timeline. Like they have to get through this drug development phase and clinical trial phase and show success, or they're out of business. Right. And that's bad for our community, because if you have a lot of drug companies fail for reasons when they shouldn't have failed, and when we as a community could have helped them be successful,
right,
who's going to invest, right, down the road? So we all have a stake in helping this whole endeavor succeed.
Absolutely. And it sounds like that if we get involved, that's going to bridge some of those gaps where the need is to have patient involvement. I think that's also important to understand.
Right.
You know, the purpose of this telethon is, yeah, of course, we want to raise funds. Giving Tuesday, we have, you know, the $100,000 match, and that's a big challenge, and we want to meet that. But it's also getting the word out. You know, we're drawing a lot of attention with this telethon, I hope, and that maybe with networking and social media on top of that with this event, we can get more patients involved. There's no time to be quiet or fearful. We're all in it together. And I think you hit the nail right on the head, June. We need people to kind of come up out of the woodwork, so to speak, and start making their presence known to help the whole, you know. That's good stuff. Any final thoughts before we pass you on to the next guest here?
Well, first of all, I just want to emphasize, since you bring up donations, both are important. Mm-hmm. The speed at which we can progress is almost directly tied to how much money we can invest in this, in solving this problem. And we have, you know, our wonderful chief science officer has been working so hard to develop these projects that would solve these gaps. And yet there are delays when we don't have the funding to move forward with it. You know, and fortunately, you know, we've had people really come forward. We're doing very well. We're moving forward with these things, but we would love to really have a 3-year war chest. I mean, we've been looking for 3-year pledges from our biggest donors, because you can't do this kind of thing on a year to year. Like, okay, we just did this 1 year. Let's see what we can do next year. These projects are multi-year projects. We're committing to doing them, so we're asking our donors at every level to make the same kind of commitment so that we can get there. So it takes both volunteers, people participating, and people donating. If you can do both, well, bless you. If you can only do one, bless you too. It all makes a difference. And Tim, I also really want to give a shout out to you, because I know you have volunteered for research studies.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And you have stepped forward to take on this role as a host, to create this podcast as a kind of virtual living room for everybody anywhere in the world. They can join and feel less alone, feel supported. So I want to really thank you for that.
Thanks. I definitely appreciate you saying that. I like that. I like that term, a living room. I want people to feel comfortable here, you know, I'm with you kind of attitude. And think of me as the glue too. I'm trying to glue us all together a little bit, you know, make us a little closer. So, well, thanks June for chiming in this morning, bringing some valuable information, get us the next step closer to meeting our financial goal today and hopefully exceeding it. Wish you the best today.
That would be awesome. That would make my day for sure. You're welcome. Before I forget, I do want to thank these amazing donors who have pledged this 100,000 matching gift challenge this year. So this is over and above the year-end challenge. This is dollar for dollar match for every donation that you listeners out there make today and your friends. So let's hit this out of the park.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Thanks, June. Take care.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
So that's June Kinoshita. She is a huge support system, being the Chief Strategic Programs Officer. I don't think that has, of the FSHD Society, I don't think that title encompasses enough of what she does and the outreach. So nice start for today. We got two great guests we've had on already, Mark Stone, June Kinoshita from the FSHD Society. Next up, we're going to bring in Lou Kunkel. He is a renowned Harvard scientist who discovered the Duchenne muscular dystrophy gene. So we're going to talk a little bit of the science of this. Our next guest here on our telethon for Giving Tuesday is Dr. Lou Kunkel. He is a renowned Harvard scientist who discovered the Duchenne muscular dystrophy gene. That sounds amazing to me. Hello, doctor. How are you?
I am fine. I'm glad to be here.
Excellent. We are happy that you're here. I know I have not spoken with you in the past. I've had some people within this telethon event today that I have interviewed before. You are a first, so welcome. Thanks for being here and spending some time with us in the morning on this telethon, helping us donate hopefully a ton of money to help cure this FSHD. You've had some amazing discovery yourself in this world, discovering the Duchenne's MD gene. You're also a scientist here with our scientific advisory board of the FSHD Society. So can you tell us a little bit about yourself, maybe a little about what has driven you, what's your passion, I guess, to discover these things, these neuromuscular disorders?
So my history is I'm a geneticist, a human geneticist. And I became involved in trying to identify the gene responsible for Duchenne muscular dystrophy, mm-hmm. the most common form. And I got a grant from the Muscular Dystrophy Association in the early 80s to do that. And I've been working on muscular dystrophy ever since. Mm-hmm. We identified the gene in 86 and described the protein dystrophin in 87. And In the 90s, I became familiar with Dan Perez, and as he was just starting the FSH Society, and he asked me to be on their scientific advisory board. And I said yes, after a bit of persuasion from Dan. And I've been working with the FSH Society now for close to 20 years. And I'm now co-director of a Wellstone Center grant from the National Institutes of Health to essentially identify biomarkers for FSHD and then ultimately develop therapies for FSHD. We're in our third round of 5 years of support from the National Institutes of Health. And it's been a great time. It's been pushed very heavily by Dan and the FSH Society. Mm-hmm. And we're at a critical time right now. There are in development, in human trials, drugs for FSHD. And there are at least six or seven more in various stages of academic development and in corporate development as well. So it's really a beautiful time for patients with FSHD, that there really is some hope on the horizon.
Wow. Yeah, when you say that, those that are, you know, if it's early in the morning for them in their time zone right now, I think that that probably sparked them up quite a bit when you're saying there's that much work happening to have treatment, to have cure. What do you think that timeline or that window is then? Because I know that's the first thing I think of with someone that has the disease. Wow, it's like all these things are working. Well, then how much time is that going to take to possibly get to that cure, get to that treatment?
Well, all of these things take time. Mm-hmm. I won't talk about that. As I said, there are two human trials in progress. Those are small, and they're studying whether the drug has an effect on patients with FSHD relative to a control population who aren't on drug. We'll see. And then if those show promise, those will go into the clinic and potentially get FDA approval. So those could be available. Like the Spinraza for spinal muscular atrophy was made available probably within a year or two of their clinical trials.
Wow.
And that's an amazing drug for spinal muscular atrophy. Many of those kids are essentially cured.
That's amazing. That's amazing.
And so
yeah, go ahead.
And there's things like that happening in FSHD. So I think it's promising time.
It sounds definitely that it is. And a person with your resume, because we're talking to Dr. Lou Kunkel, a renowned Harvard scientist. He's on the scientific advisory board for the FSHD Society, worked with the FSHD Society now for about 20 years, is talking to us a little bit about what sounds like, honestly, doctor, sounds like hope. That is really what you're preaching. Yeah.
These things are all very expensive. Mm-hmm. And so that's the need for support for these from the society to put money into these developments. So this fundraiser is fantastic for that.
It sounds, yeah. And I'm glad that you kind of led that segue, because that's really why we're here today, right? And we want to try to gain support. And I think you being on this telethon in this segment right now is really explaining why we need that. If we have two human trials, even though they're small, but they're in the works now, you said like six or seven are in an academic level. So that means there is work. That means money is being directed in the right way, not just in support groups that the FSHD Society provides and the chapters and that stuff and funding those things, but really purposeful in having a cure or treatment in a smaller or short window, so we hope. I guess it leads then to what do you believe then? I mean, do you believe then? I would imagine it's yes, but I want to hear your opinion on then patient involvement, not just on the financial side, but, you know, for drug trials or, you know, clinical trials, et cetera. How important is that?
It's absolutely essential to move this forward, is to have patient participation. And I can say that the FSHD patients have all them, at least the ones I've met and talked with, are all extremely enthusiastic about getting involved, taking a role, playing a role in therapy development. They want to be informed. They want to know. So I find that the group a very, very well-educated, well-informed group of patients, and they're real advocates for their disease.
What kind of struggles, though, do you think are probably our biggest hurdles here at this point? You know, hope is great, but obviously we're not there yet.
The biggest hurdle is understanding the natural history of the disease. Because it's so variable between different individuals, it makes the design of clinical trials very difficult. Because remember, we want to be able to see something in a few months or even within a year. And the disease is so variable that takes large numbers of patients to be enrolled in the study to be sure that we're statistically significantly seeing a difference between the treated group versus either a cohort of natural history or a placebo group. So patients need to be involved.
It seems like, yeah, that's definitely the crucial thing because of the fact that it's so different, you know, from one person to another. I have the same disease as someone else has the same thing, and we're affected completely different at different times in our life. Do you think does that have to be found out, you know, why that is in order to equal a treatment? You know, why does it vary so different in people?
Well, that's actually part of our Wellstone Center grant, this cycle, is to try to look at the genetics behind the variability in the disease. And so we're actually looking in a very large kindred in Utah from a single founder individual, a huge family, which has variable expression of the disease, yet everybody has the exact same mutation. And we're trying the gene that's causing that difference, the variability in the disease.
Is that a little bit of or maybe I'm off base, I'm not a scientist, so forgive me, but a little bit about the gene partnership that I read that you're working with?
A little bit, not really, though. Mm-hmm. That was more of trying to educate and get enrolled not just people with diseases, but normal, quote, individuals who serve as a control population. But in general, none of us are normal. We all have various things that predispose us to something. Cardiovascular disease, cancer. But in the case of FSHD, it's a real strong genetic component. But we wanted to enroll many, many more people as a control group. But yes, I think that there are predicted to be patients who have FSHD but don't even know it based on the genetics. That's because their disease is so mild that it doesn't impact their life at all.
Mm-hmm. So unbeknownst to them that they do have it. So then how do we get those people to be a part of this if they don't even realize that they're affected?
Well, the way we're doing it in our Wellstone is we also have cohorts of patients where we've recruited from within the same family, a patient who's affected and a sibling who's unaffected. And in about 5% of the time, the unaffected sibling is actually got the same genetic variant that the affected sibling has, the patient with FSHD, and they just don't know it. They're so mildly affected. And so we're using those cohorts also to try to identify genetic modifiers.
Where can, if patients want to know more about the work you're doing, Doctor, with the Wellstone Center, how can they find out more about that?
Well, I believe there's a write-up on our Wellstone Center website. I believe also the FSH Society has had a brochure that they actually talked about the Wellstone Center and what its goals were. And if not, we can actually set something up through the society to actually make the group more aware of what's happening at the Wellstone Center.
Awesome. That sounds great. So everybody visit fshdsociety.org, you know, look up for the Wellstone Center. Google is your friend in this one, Wellstone Center. Sounds like great work is being done, Doctor. I appreciate your time today, letting us know the work that we need to do and why today is so important. I appreciate your time.
It definitely is important. And as I said, this is a critical time right now.
Thank you, Doctor.
Thank you.
Well, that will wrap it up for this episode of the FSHD Society Radio Show. So happy that we could bring the first session of interviews to you.
if you want to learn more about the telethon and a little bit about the FSHD Society, go to fshdsociety.org. You can also still donate. Always appreciate that as we push hard to get this cure and treatments to not just myself, but so many others affected by FSHD by 2025. Thanks for listening. We'll talk soon. You've been listening to the FSHD Society Radio Show Podcast.